I swear I'm gonna get to you, okay? But right now, I need you to hide.
Sheriff Hopper delivers the difficult news to Joyce that they've recovered Will's body at the quarry, which she refuses to believe. Jonathan thinks his mom is nuts and decides to plan Will's funeral without her.
Nancy, motivated by the strange thing she saw in the woods, looks at the photo Jonathan took of Barb and sees what appears to be a monstrous shape in the background. She seeks out Jonathan, who, using his photography skills, manages to confirm her discovery and realizes his mother has been right the entire time.
Joyce continues to try to make contact with Will. Eleven, wanting to comfort the grieving Mike, manages to tune into Will using first a walkie-talkie, then manages to overhear Joyce communicating with Will using the school's ham radio to amplify her powers.
Sheriff Hopper's also skeptical of the official story. He tracks down the coroner who claims to have been kicked off Will's case, then the state trooper who found his body. He beats a cover-up confession out of him, manages to punch his way into the morgue, where he discovers that Will's body's actually a realistic dummy.
Back at Hawkins' laboratory, Dr. Brenner sends in a soldier through the disgusting portal or rift where the soldier is attacked by something on the other side. They try to pull the soldier back through, but all they get is bloody scraps of his hazmat uniform. Welcome to Dungeons & Demigorgons, the officially unofficial podcast for Stranger Things on Netflix. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we just watched Season 1, Episode 4, titled Chapter 4, The Body, which is a fitting name. This is all about the body.
Oh, yeah.
What'd you think of the body?
I like it. I like this little arc where you start the episode with nearly every major character who has an opinion on the matter thinking that Joyce is nuts. And then by the end of the episode, every major character is convinced that she's right.
Yeah.
One way or another. And, you know, Hopper, I guess the one thing I had a little bit of trouble with is how quickly Hopper jumped on board here. With, like, you know, officially doubting the story that was being promulgated by the powers that be to just beating up officers of the law and punching his way into restricted areas and cutting his way into this laboratory. Like, that's...
and into Will's body.
Yeah, and into Will's body. Pretty strong step. I felt like maybe a couple shortcuts taken in that development, but... Pretty good.
Yeah, I try to put myself, I guess, in his shoes and say, okay, he has been through this before, right? He understands, I guess, where Joyce is coming from, and he's really leaning toward her pretty far here.
But why? Because that's the thing. He shows up in the first episode, and Joyce's house looks like an insane asylum.
Oh, beginning of this one, yeah.
Oh, she got those lights strung up with the Ouija board thing, and she's got the ball of lights and sand. And here's the thing, like, Joyce does this thing that crazy people do where, like, I think if I met an alien and I came in here and, like, I tried to explain it to you and a police officer, and, like, three sentences in, I'd be like, oh, this isn't working. You know what? Fuck it. But she just continues to give more and more expository information. And he's listening to her and being kind because he sympathizes. Like, okay, well, this is a weird grief reaction, but whatever.
Yeah.
I felt like they didn't... I mean, there's enough there that can make the connections. I don't feel like they sold his connection to her grief and him wanting to, like, you know, prove it to her or prove it to himself quite well enough.
Yeah, I think I can agree with you there. It's helped by the fact that we know Joyce is right.
Right.
So it's easy to overlook that. But I think, yeah, as far as a storytelling perspective, maybe he's a little more eager to believe her. Although he has this third party who's kind of, you know, telling him weird shit went down, right? Like I don't know who it is. It's maybe the coroner.
Yeah, it's the coroner. No, like I said, there's reasons for what he's doing.
Yeah.
I just thought that maybe
they're
it's
just
a
not
little...
amazing.
Similarly, but... I thought that Jonathan and Nancy made up. Like, I get that he prefers to take pictures and observe people rather than interact with them. Number one, that's kind of creepy because he's essentially positioning himself as a voyeur. But she's just ready to overlook all of that. And I don't know. It's like I felt like they fast forwarded. There should have been a little bit more friction. Like, she should have come in there from a position of like, I need help on this thing, but I think you're kind of a creep, rather than a sympathetic position. I don't know, or maybe not. Maybe that's just not the person Nance is. I know.
Yeah, it's tough to tell. I wish they would have established that there was what kind of relationship they had before the series, which is impossible to do because it would have been part of the series.
Yeah, I mean, I know that their brothers were good friends. Yeah. And, like, it's like in my small town America experience, then that probably meant that they had more than passing, really, you know.
Right.
They've gone to school together for this long, have been in kind of roughly the same neighborhood, so they knew of each other, but maybe there was. Maybe they had like if they'd sketched out a relationship they had before she made this bid to be popular, and you know I don't know that.
Yeah,
that,
my only real understanding is she feels bad for him having lost, you know, his brother.
And that's fine, but again, like I felt like I don't know. I also don't understand why he went to their house and took photos. I mean, I remember when we discussed that, and that just seemed weird. Like you're looking for your brother.
Weird.
And now there's these girls here, and they're jumping into the swimming pool. So let's take some what you know to be creepy. And like he gave this apology, but it wasn't really an apology, you know. Like he's like, yeah, I understand. It's a little weird. Sorry. Like, do you?
I thought it was a little more sincere than that, but yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that felt a little rushed. I tell you, the stuff that did work is again, like I love all this stuff about the kids. Like you know, I felt like Mike was frustrated because he's trying to impress upon 11 like what a shit she was to him and his viewpoint, and she wasn't getting it. Well, she was trying to concentrate on something else, and he was getting progressively madder, and how that all like melted away as soon as she got that solid connection with Will.
Yeah,
thought that was really good. And then also like I like Lucas as the continuing doubting skeptic.
Even he is convinced by the end of this.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
How could you not be after that conversation?
Right. Like, they tuned in to the most, like the most interesting thing that's happened between Will and his mom in this entire run. So, like, yeah, how can you deny that something crazy's happened? She's, if nothing else, she set the lab equipment on fire.
Right. With her mind.
Right. And I also like how Dustin is so willing to view everything in life through a comic book prism.
Sure, yeah.
Like, I like him. I think he's going to be a sucker for conspiracy theories in the future. But he's like, oh, yeah, it's like Professor... Like hook her up to the ham radio. Like, it's like Professor X with the fucking...
Cerebro.
Yeah. And he's just...
That feels just so much like a kid, you know? It's... That's just the tone that nails it for me is like the perspective that these kids have on everything.
Yeah, like in Kidland, citing a piece of pop culture that is similar to the thing that's going is proof to let your fucking fantasies fly rampant.
Yeah,
and if you actually have a magical little girl. Then things get
it's once like E.T. shows up,
yeah,
all bets are off.
That's what's great. It's just like Goonies, just like E.T. Like this is what kids do, but now it's like imagine kids that actually found a treasure. Imagine a kid that actually had an alien best friend. Imagine the kids that are actually investigating their friend's mysterious disappearance with the help of a psychic girl. All good stuff.
A singer of the Joy Division who could actually sing. God, they start off with this song, and I'm like, who is this? Because he cannot sing at all. And I guess that's just a thing.
I really like these musical montages. They had the Peter Gabriel's Heroes before this one, like that the staccato kind of like military tune really kind of suited everyone, like Joyce's grim determination as she grabs the axe to start her vigil of the wall, because if this monster comes through again, she's going to be ready. I'm like, Joyce, you have a gun. You have a gun, dear. There's a gun in this house.
Is there?
Yeah, Will got a rifle out.
Did it go with him?
Surely not.
I don't know. What? I didn't see it on the wall when Hopper was in there.
Why would God need a starship? Why?
I don't know.
Why would
I mean,
the portal beings need
his
a
his clothes go with
rifle?
Him? Like, I assume
surely.
Anything you've got on your person at the time is going
Barb's
with
clothes
you.
Went through her to the other
That's true.
Side,
the so. The suit went through with the guy in this episode, so...
Exactly.
And his helmet lights and everything.
Yep. Yeah, we want to talk about that soldier scene?
Sure, yeah.
Whose bright idea was it to send a soldier into a dark place with lights inside his helmet? Like, do they not know? He's going to be treated like, what do you see, soldier? I see a distorted reflection of my own face.
No, but look past that. I can't.
Is my nose this big? Am I really this? My cheeks this puffy? No. It's just a convex surface. It's making everything look big head and stretchy.
I mean, obviously, that's for the film.
Yeah.
For the series to, you know, the style effect of it all. I mean, whatever.
Ridley Scott started that shit back in Alien. He discovered that, like, the reverse is true. Like, if you put an actor in a fishbowl and it's dark in there and and you got Hollywood lights on the outside, it's just a fucking mirrored surface. So I know, let's line it all with LED. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make a lick of fucking real world sense.
No, it doesn't.
Although I'm waiting for the feedback that says, no, actually, you know, most
in this shaped helmet with
right, it's like you have to have the lights or else the fucking optics are not. Like I make these statements, these common sense statements, and I'm always fucking wrong. So I welcome the corrections.
That's the trouble with common sense. It's often wrong.
It's often wrong. Anyone that says they're seeking a common sense solution to a complex problem, you should put your hand on your wallet and back away slowly.
The other thing, though, that seems to make all the sense in the world is this idea of delusions, which that's the trouble with delusions, right, is the person experiencing them thinks they're real. They appear real to that person. And if we didn't know any better, Joyce could very easily be described as that.
That's
delusional.
That's why I really love her arc. It's very rarely that you see, like, I mean, most of the time you see a hysterical, like, and I'm going to use this word intentionally, a hysterical, irrational female stereotype, which is what Joyce is being. It's just that.
Yeah.
I think it's brilliant that you're actually seeing a person whose reactions are entirely logical and warranted given the information she's got, but everyone's dismissing her because she looks like a lunatic.
And
I think that's really, really great, and it lets Winona Ryder play kind of a fairly annoying stereotype heroically.
Sure. Yeah.
Like when she grabs the axe, that's looks batshit, but it's cool.
Yeah, no, it's like I said about her going back into the house last episode.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, fuck this. I'm not going to let it get to me.
Like, she chops a hole. Now, like, I don't know why. I don't know why when she peels the wallpaper back and she sees the slime portal, which, what gave them the idea that to try to send a soldier into that?
Why not?
Mucus membrane. Like,
they didn't have, like, what are they going to do? Send the robot from Rocky V in? They didn't really have great robotics back then.
They didn't have great
robotics.
They're
going to go to NASA and say, can we borrow Pathfinder?
Camera on a pole? Like, there's a lot of things you can do before you go right to send a living person into the vaginal opening. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, it looks like a solid surface. So what would – I mean, they know more about this than they're letting on. This isn't like – you know, like, when I'm watching these first few episodes, I'm trying to think out, like, what – okay. They're experimenting with Eleven is the idea that maybe the experiments they're doing with her made unwitting contact with this other dimensional or alien force and it attracted
them.
That's
the feeling I've been getting,
Is this a parallel project that had nothing to do with Elle and she managed to escape into confusion? Like, we don't know. But the fact that they send the dude in here implies that maybe they know more about this than you'd think.
They could, And they set up the machine last episode, which I guess was there to, like, take readings.
Mechanical blowjob machine.
So I don't know. Maybe they've been studying it for a while.
That's true.
And they have sent stuff through, you know.
Hmm.
And just nothing's come back.
Yeah, those faceless bear creatures are shy.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
I want to go back to Joyce real quick, because we talked about, you know, how this could appear delusional to people, but it's also pretty disempowering for her. I would feel like that in her situation, because she knows something is going on here, but she doesn't have a solution on how to proceed, right? Like, what is the next step there? Just wait for Will to talk to you, I guess? She doesn't have a way forward here. She can hack her way through her wall, and she can sit there with the Christmas lights and everything, but how does she get to Will? She just doesn't know.
Yeah, no.
So it's like a really frustrating position for her to be in.
Well, I can't even imagine what it's like to be a parent and, like, say your child is in the, you know, fucking Chrome Jelly Bean in Chicago.
Okay. Like inside
you,
of it?
Yeah. Yeah, like, you have certain knowledge that they're inside that. How do you get in? Like, it resists, yeah. like you try to break it open, and it's like, it would be maddening to know where your child is and get no one to give you any help. Like, if he was stuck in a well, you tell Sheriff Hopper, right. CNN would be there with news crews, and it'd be excavators, and it would be like, but you tell you say your son is in a ball of light on the other side of your wallpaper,
yeah,
and everybody looks at you like you're crazy. It's a really brilliant conceit.
It is,
and like the fact
I feel
that,
for her.
And it's like it's tearing apart her family, because Jonathan. This is a lot for Jonathan. Yeah. Like he's essentially a little kid. He has to plan his brother's funeral. They have this huge fight in the middle of the town square where everyone in the city looks and gawks at them screaming this crazy shit at each other. It's one of my favorite parts of the show.
It's going to be super interesting to see, I guess, how Lonnie reacts to this, because he shows up at the end of the episode and she's happy to see him, but...
Is she?
I think she's just happy to have anyone who might believe her there.
I don't think he's gonna.
No, that's the problem. Although, he's also going to have... She's going to have Jonathan backing her up, right? Mm-hmm. So, at this point, like... Both of them are going to be talking about this stuff.
Why do you think Lonnie showed up? Because he just now got notification of Will's dead, probably.
Oh, yeah, probably.
So he's there, and he's going to, like, what I think is going to happen is Lonnie's going to go in there, and I don't know, maybe he's going to, like, there's all kinds of complications that could happen. Like, she could, like, maybe he's going to try to have her committed or try to take Jonathan away from her. I don't know. But I don't think he's going to be a positive force in this story.
Probably not.
Can we talk about dressing Elle up?
Yeah, let's talk about Elle a little.
I thought that was pretty funny. The fact that they're like, how are we going to get this freak into our school? And they come, they decide to...
Well, first of all, I don't really like the label freak. She's not really a freak. She just doesn't talk much.
Yeah.
And she has some bad shit in her past. She doesn't look that weird.
She's an androgynous person with a buzz cut.
Right.
In the story. Yeah.
Yeah, like, come on, Dustin.
Like, you could have put a ball cap on her and jeans, and she would have probably passed as your male cousin from Sweden. Mm-hmm. But what I think is really funny is these boys, no experience at all, successfully make up and dress and apply a wig almost flawlessly to her.
Yeah.
Like, she looks really good. Like, as Dustin says, she looks pretty. And then Mike covers with pretty good. And then Eleven sets him on fire with her mind because she's insecure about her personal appearance.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Mike.
Certainly with her eyes, she did.
Yeah, yeah. What'd you think? Like, here's the other thing is the boys go and they want to go to the Radio Shack lab where their ham radio is because they want, mm-hmm. you know, if Eleven can kind of make contact with a walkie-talkie, my God, what could she do with a ham rig?
Put herself into a coma, yeah. Apparently.
Yeah, and they get roped into going to a convocation. It's like, I sat through, like, there's in my school, a girl committed suicide, and I remember kind of thinking the same thing. Like, you know, everybody's there, and it's, like, artificial because, like, unless you're, like, one of the more popular kids in school, no, like everyone's got this outpouring of grief, but it's all misplaced. Like, there's, like, a core group of 6 to 12 people are probably really fucking affected, and everybody else is just being a fucking dramatic teenager. Yeah. And Mike sees these bullies kind of, like, you know, joking about Will being an outcast, and they confront him about it, and Elle freezes him and makes him piss himself.
Fantastic. I loved it.
Yeah.
There goes his reputation as a tough guy right out the window.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt like
it's only justice because we see what a shit he is to Mike, but I bet if we could see more of his life, we wouldn't feel so good about it.
That's the thing, man. Like, every time I've seen...
It's the Breakfast Club, right? Like, his old man putting cigarettes out on his arm.
I mean,
like,
some kids are probably just bad seeds, but a lot of times you track down these kids that are problem in schools. They got, like, they're just paying forward the hell that they experience at their house.
Right.
So, you know, is it going to help his life to now be the pee pants boy?
Probably won't help it, no.
I don't know. Maybe he'll shoot up to high school in a few years. Who knows?
Or maybe he'll get through high school and realize, oh, yeah, none of that shit matters.
Pissing yourself, especially that late in the game, is something that is only fixed by moving, like, states. Like, you have to move halfway. like, that shit.
The word travels.
Yeah, and in modern days, I don't know that you can get away from with Facebook, because goddamn, as soon as someone found you on Facebook, they would make sure everyone in your school knew that you were the person who pissed your pants.
And there'd be pictures of it, and
heart goes out. Like, I remember 2 or 3 kids that pissed their pants in school. I wonder how they turned out.
Especially at the assembly. Like, you can...
In front of everyone.
I feel like you could almost get away with it if you were, like, at your desk or in the hall, like, between classes or something. You could almost, like, maybe hide it, but at the assembly,
wasn't, like, just a little spot. It was, full-on, like, 11 psychically grabbed his bladder like a stress relief toy and just squeezed it all out. pretty bad. I felt bad. Felt bad for the fucking bully.
I did, but not that bad.
You're not supposed to. You're supposed to enjoy the Schadenfreude along with the kids.
But it does make me wonder, like, I'm trying to figure out her power still, right? So she can – her nose starts bleeding a little bit when she's, like, spying on Will.
With the walkie-talkie.
And I call it spying because I don't think he was really aware that he was communicating with them.
Right. He was just singing to himself.
Yeah. And then her nose bleeds a lot when she, like, spies for a longer period, or
they're using the more powerful
using
equipment.
The bigger equipment. And she doesn't seem to have the ability to... I'm not even sure if she knows what she's seeing and hearing, or if she can see it and hear it without putting it through some electronic device.
Could be, because they showed her back in the lab when the you know, her father, her papa, asked her to spy on this man and pass on what he's reading in this controlled experiment they're doing, she had to pipe it through the intercom.
Right. She couldn't just say the words.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
It's a weird limitation to her power.
Yeah. And like we've said before, there's some kind of like electronic connection to this other world, to L's powers.
It interferes with electricity. There's something... Yeah.
But it also uses it temporarily. Like,
I guess
it can be controlled by whatever forces are over there. I don't know.
Right.
But it gets more and more interesting.
Plus, when she used the full, when she used the full rig, she wasn't bleeding out of all of her face holes, but
just
her
a lot
face,
more blood.
Her face was fucked up too. It had that similar kind of veiny pattern running through it
as when she killed those guys.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So this took a lot out of her, and she also ruined their ham radio club. Like, that school, they spent all their grant money on that.
Right.
That's supposed to last 20 years.
Yep, it's coming out of the science teacher's paycheck.
Yeah, it was tough on nerds back in the day. It's like, you know, you had ham radio, you had chess club, you had chemistry class, maybe, if you're into that kind of thing. And then there's no computer labs.
No, not then. There wouldn't have really been.
No, I mean, there might have been some TRS-80s with the logo cartridge.
Yeah,
Apple
II or something.
Maybe you could play. That was before
Oregon Trail.
So that was before Oregon Trail, I think.
Maybe it was 83. That's got to be before Oregon Trail. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
For sure, because I was playing Oregon Trail when I was in late elementary school. Mm-hmm. So, late 80s.
Well, I mean.
They were
that's a grim game. You're hunting for food. Your grandma's dying of dysentery. Yeah. Like, you don't want to throw that on a kindergartner.
You're seeing faceless bears in the woods.
Faceless bears in the woods.
That you have to kill for food.
Shoot them for 150 pounds of food.
Hell yeah.
The other thing we found out about this dimension or this place that Will's in is he says it's like home but dark, scary, and cold, which kind of confirms that's what happened to Barb.
Seems like it.
Because I guess we don't know to what extent, like, there's a time shift component here, but, like, you know, his findings are consistent with Barb's. Now, what I can't explain is why Will is able to stay away from the Demogorgon. Like, he seems to be able to evade it even as he's singing Clash songs to himself. As he's trying to make attempt the conversation with his mom across, you know, drywall.
It's all that D&D.
I wonder if there's something kind of special about Will too.
Could be, yeah.
You find out that they split Will and Elle. They were twins, and they were split up as a baby experiment in the 70s.
Maybe. I don't know.
that's my leading theory right now. Because also, like, yeah, like, Barb couldn't do shit to those guys. No. She's got just fucked right away.
Yeah.
What is the explanation there?
I don't know. I'm also kind of curious how many, I'll call them Demogorgons, there are. Is there more than one? Because I feel like at any given time, there might be, like, at least two going around. I'm not sure.
Yeah, we've never seen more than one.
No.
So why do you think there's more than one?
I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of different sightings at a lot of different places. And I don't know if there's, like, a specific Demogorgon, like, stalking Will, trying to find him. Or if the one that attacked Barb was just kind of off duty on Will for a while and decided to kill her.
Yeah.
I really don't know. We're kind of not privy to much information on the other side.
What do you think Hopper's doing? Like,
chopping open.
Yeah, I mean, he just everything escalates so fast in this episode. He goes from talking to the coroner to trying to buddy up to the state trooper to and the editing is awful weird. Like, we just see him at a bar and he's like, you know, using memories of his daughter, which are clearly still painful to him.
Yeah.
Then it smash cuts to him after this guy rebuffs him, smash cuts to them outside in the alley, and Hopper is just tuning him up.
He's going
to
get answers, goddammit.
The guy says, you're going to get us both killed. Hopper sees this black government-issued sedan, like, peel out, and I thought he's going to shoot at him.
So did I.
Because he's just a loose cannon, and then he goes from there to the morgue where he tries to bluff his way past the state trooper there, punches that guy, slices up Will's body, and then goes to the Hopkins research place with a pair of what do you call those? Bolt cutters?
Yeah.
And bolt cuts his way through the fence. To what end?
I mean, I...
Like, what's he looking for?
It's fucking strange. So, up until the point where he cuts up on Will's body and it's a Muppet, like, I was kind of on board with you. I'm like, okay, something's obviously weird here, but it's not so weird that he needs to, like, start punching people and
yeah,
like, all that stuff. But once he cuts open Will's body and finds a bunch of stuffing in there, now all bets are off. I'm like, what the fuck is happening here?
Right.
And I guess he puts sort of two and two together here in his own mind and says, okay, Will's body was a fake. Somebody wanted us to just get off their tail. The only other place I've been that something has been strange in is Hawkins.
Because he caught the discrepancy in the weather for that day.
He knew they were lying to him.
The footage that they were showing him, right.
Yeah, so he figures maybe they placed the body.
What I get, and maybe he feels like he can't trust anybody.
Yeah.
Like his deputies, like if he tells them, they might tell somebody, and suddenly he's going to be, you know, grabbed with a black hood over his head and sent down to Guantanamo.
Could be.
But I also think
deep right now.
As a single guy, both you know, as a lone man in the world, and also as a man who's divorced from his wife,
uh-huh.
as a single, you know,
in all the ways a man can be single.
Yeah. What does he think he's gonna do? Like if like that's the thing.
Right.
Like you find out that this body is fake,
mm-hmm.
that cover up goes so high that. You know, again, what are you going to do? You're going to go into this secure facility that probably has these soldiers in hazmat suits and they got guns.
Mm-hmm.
And what the hell are you going to do? You got your six shooter.
Yeah.
And you're not acting in an official capacity.
I don't know, man.
If I was Hopper, the temptation would just be like, you know what? I'm fuck this.
Yeah.
Joyce, your kid's dead. You're going to have to figure it out yourself because I dig any deeper and I'm a dead man.
I think maybe that would be his reaction if it weren't for his daughter, right?
Yeah.
Like if he hadn't lost his daughter and understands what Joyce is feeling right now,
mm-hmm.
I think he might let it drop. Mm-hmm. Or he might have let it drop during the autopsy stuff. He might not have gone to that place and cut up Will's body. But he can't.
And as a single guy, he's got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
So it's just his, we've also gotten hints that he's not really satisfied with the way his life's going. He's haunted, so.
Hints? You mean the incessant drinking and
yeah,
smoking?
Yeah, staring
and
off into space.
Sleeping around, yeah.
The permanent 1,000-yard stare.
Those hints.
That's funny because I thought that, like, when he was trying to ingratiate himself with that state trooper at the bar, like, his attempts to appear a regular human were not great.
No, not
there was
great.
Something little, like he could barely keep it together telling the story. It was I don't know if it was made up or not about his daughter.
Yeah.
Clearly she didn't win the spelling bee that day.
No.
Because she is D-E-A-D. Use it in a sentence. Hopper's daughter is dead. D-E-A-D.
Oh,
but it's weird because the way the editing was a little loosey-goosey because I remember when we both were watching that, we're like, what the fuck? Did we just flash back
yeah.
to like before his daughter was dead and then mm-hmm. kind of caught up to what was going on?
He looked a little cleaned up too.
He did. He did. He's putting his best face forward.
You know, I mean, he definitely smoked and drank in this episode, but not like right after rolling out of bed.
Right.
I wonder if this mission that he's on is maybe helping
purpose.
Him out a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to our season one coverage of Stranger Things. If you like what you hear and want more, check out all of our television, movie, and pop culture content on baldmove.com. If you'd like to help support our podcast and get a ton of bonus content and features, check out club.baldmove.com. We'll also be taking feedback during our upcoming season one wrap-up podcast, so send that in to strangerthings@baldmove.com. You can also discuss this with your fellow fans at forums.baldmove.com or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Until next time, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.